Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Welcome to downtown St. Louis. I am Paul Harris, sitting in the poker room at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. The poker room packed tonight. Lots of players, lots of chips. Lots of people looking at that $90,000 bad beat that they've got going on here tonight. It's been building up over the last couple of months, and lots of players playing for that. Plus the big 5-10 game, a Tuesday night tradition in downtown St. Louis, going on as well. Dennis is not in St. Louis. In fact, I don't think you could get further away from St. Louis than where he is now. He is in Argentina for the second time this year, and he's going to join us on the phone here in a moment. There's a photo shoot going on now at this event called the America's Cup of Poker, and in a minute or two, he's going to step away from that and join us to talk a little bit about this. He is the captain of the U.S. team in this event called the America's Cup of Poker. So he'll join us from there. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is on the other line, joining us from California. Joe, how are you tonight?
Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Give us a little preview of what you're going to talk about in the poker coach segment tonight.
I think we're going to go over basically what I would call leaving chips on the table, Paul. Basically a lot of players when they play, there's a lot of spots where, just like I just said, they leave a lot of chips on the table.
You don't mean somebody getting up and going to dinner?
No. No, it's just certain spots where they should have capitalized and won more money than what they did. A lot of times a player will be in a pot and they'll feel really good about it, and sometimes another player or two will be talking on the other side of the table and say, boy, I would have valued at the river there, or boy, I would have got more money in that pot. So it's just a little term that I certainly didn't come up with, but leaving chips on the table, there's more chips that they could have had, and there's more money that they could have won in certain pots of how they played the hand.
Gotcha. Okay, that's coming up in our poker coach segment a little later on this hour. Also, a conversation with Peter Eastgate, who is still the reigning champion of the World Series of Poker main event. He's the guy who knocked Dennis out and then knocked Ivan Demidov out and became the winner of the $9 million-plus in the November 9 final table event last year at the Rio for the 2008 WSOP main event bracelet. Peter will not be repeating that, but he had a pretty deep run, as did Dennis this year, and we'll talk a little bit about the play between the two of them last fall and also about Peter's appearance earlier this year on a high-stakes poker episode that had a lot of people talking. Also, if we have time, we're going to hear from one of Joe's heroes, Mike Caro, the King of Tells, who calls himself the guy who didn't invent the concept of the tell, but certainly taught a lot of people around the world about it. He calls himself the mad genius of poker, and if we have time, we'll hear a little bit of that poker coach one-on-one segment later on. But now let's go to Argentina. Dennis, are you there?
I am right here. How's it going, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. You are the captain of the U.S. team for the America's Cup of Poker, and I don't even know what that means.
It's pretty awesome, actually. PokerStars asked me to do this. It was really hard to decide. Let's see, they flew me down to Argentina. I am in an absolutely fabulous place down here. And actually, I am joined at the table here with me with a couple of extremely attractive young women also who escorted me down here and around because I
Very
have to
nice.
Go way back upstairs to another interview.
Oh, okay.
Yes, this is pretty awesome. I had never been here in the Andes before, in the mountains, and they've got me in a hotel that when you look out, it looks like a picture, something that's just fabulous. You could only see in a movie almost. Unbelievable.
Now, I know you were in Argentina earlier this year for a Latin American Poker Tour event. This is not the same place you were the first time?
No, I was at Mar del Plata the first time, which is over by the coast. So I'm seeing both extremes. We went from the coastline with the beaches and the sun over here to the mountains now, which are just absolutely gorgeous with the skiing and everything that way.
I mentioned
so
I at the top of the show.
Bunnies to snow bunnies.
Wow. I mentioned at the top of the show you're about as far from St. Louis as you can get. How long did it take you to get from your home here in the St. Louis area to this casino that you're at in the Andes?
Oh, it was amazing. First of all, I flew from St. Louis to Dallas, had a layover there in Dallas, and from Dallas to Buenos Aires. And then I had to go from Buenos Aires Airport, a little over an hour trip to another airport, and then catch another plane, which is another 2 hours, to go actually to the ski resort or to the airport near it, and then another, you know, 20 minutes to half an hour to get to the hotel.
Wow.
And it was worth it. That's what's amazing. It was absolutely worth it.
Is that like 24 hours straight of travel before you got there?
About 22 and a half.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're having a good time, and this event is actually going to start tomorrow. Explain what the America's Cup of Poker is. I've never even heard of it.
Well, what it is they took all the countries from North and South America, put them in a competition online through PokerStars, and there were over 60,000 people that started out this competition. It's narrowed down to 40 people now, and it's now down to only 8 countries. What they did is they narrowed it down to the top 5 from each country, and then there was interplay among them to narrow it down to the 8 countries, and now they've flown all 40 people, 5 from each country, here to Argentina to, I guess, play poker. Everybody's enjoying the heck out of it right now, but I guess we're actually going to have to play poker tomorrow.
And you're the captain of the U.S. team. Does that mean you're one of the 5, or that it's you and the 5?
No. Me and the 5. They were nice enough to offer me the captain of the U.S. team, which I jumped on. And the 6 of us are going to go see if we can't win the first America's Cup ever.
How does this work?
Competition. What it is day one, it's basically 6 different sit-and-goes. So one member from each of the 8 teams, or each of the 6 teams, will be sitting at a table, and you play for points on it. So first place, so many points, and on down the line, and then you add those all together, and that decides your first 3 places. Fourth and fifth do a heads-up match to decide that, and then those 4 teams advance to day 2. Are you still there, Paul?
I got you. Okay. And in day 2, what happens?
In day 2, it's heads-up. Basically, team 1 plays against team 4, and it's 6 individual head-to-head combat, for lack of a better word. Team 2 plays 3, same way. Winner of those 2 then play for the championship. So all
wow.
you have to do is win on the top 4 the first day, but then it's head-to-head, you know, mano a mano.
And as captain, do you get to decide who plays in each of those matches if you get to day 2 and 3?
Yes, I do. That is part of my responsibility, and that's going to be tough because these are 5 extremely good online players. They're going to be here, and I personally didn't know them up until about 24 hours ago. So I have to, tomorrow, analyze their play, rank them, and then put them who I think they would best match against say, Mexico or Canada or whoever the team happens to be that we're playing. So it's going
to
be tough.
Will you be able to watch them play, or are you going to be playing at one of those sit-and-goes as well and not be able to have a view of how they're doing?
That's part of the problems. I'm supposed to do both. I actually will be playing one of the sit-and-goes, but I also have to analyze them. We have a meeting later tonight. We had one earlier today, and we're going to depend on each other. It's going to be a team effort. This will be Team USA because each of the other members are going to be watching everybody else as they can, and if somebody gets busted out early, it's his responsibility then to go from table to table and try and pick up some tips and try to analyze the play. So,
wow.
You know, hopefully between the 6 of us, we can put something good together.
Where are your players from?
Let's see. I have one from Seattle, one from Oregon, one from Chicago, one from Florida. And who am I missing? Ohio. So they're scattered all around the country.
Wow.
On it. But, you know, we had the other gentleman, remember, a couple of weeks ago that came down from the Horseshoe in Chicago?
Yes.
Well, one of the players here plays with him in Chicago up at the Horseshoe.
Uh-huh.
So it's a small world.
Well, fantastic. Good luck with this event. It is the first time that PokerStars has put this on. Interesting that they decided to put it as far away from your home as they possibly could. Maybe next year you can convince them that the America's Cup of Poker could be played in America. Oh, I don't know. It's a crazy concept. But good luck to you and the U.S. team. I don't want to keep you because I know you've got other events that you've got to get to. And next week when you're back here in St. Louis, assuming that you do get back here to St. Louis. The event's only 3 days, so you should be back by next Tuesday, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I may be half asleep, but I'll be there.
Excellent. Well, we'll hear about your adventures then. Before you go, though, let's have one more word about PokerStars because we're proud to have them as a sponsor of the show. In addition to the event that you're doing, the America's Cup of Poker, we're 2 days away from the start of the WCOOP, the World Championship of Online Poker.
Yeah, this is the largest event for online poker in the world. There is over $40 million in guaranteed prizes. It's unbelievable. People literally look forward to this day in, day out for a solid year to get a chance to play it. And I'll be playing as much as I can there. Anybody can play on it. You can go to PokerStars.net, get in on a free roll, work your way up, and have a chance to win millions of dollars on this thing. It's unbelievable. You talk about wanting to get your feet wet. Guys, you can't do any better than this. Go to PokerStars.net, play your game. You'll be amazed at the results you can get.
PokerStars.net, where you can download the software and take a shot at the WCOOP, the World Championship of Online Poker, and find a poker star in you. All right, Dennis, we'll let you go. Say hello to the snow bunnies for me.
All right, I got one sitting right across from me. Oh.
Listen all to right, the smile on this guy's face. See you next week. Dennis Phillips.
All right, take care.
Dennis Phillips, live from Argentina at the America's Cup of Poker. I'm Paul Harris here in downtown St. Louis with more of the Lumiere Plays Final Table coming right up. Don't forget our podcasts are available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And if you've got questions about poker or anything else going on that you hear about on the show or you want to ask us about a hand that you've played, you can always email dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. I'll be right back with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel. How many times have you been at the table, got your money in? Maybe it's in a tournament, maybe it's in a cash game. You look at your hand, you look at your opponent's hand, and you say, oh, come on, one time, let this hold up, one time, or let me catch the card I need, one time. Well, that's the concept behind One Time Apparel. Now you can get that as a trademark slogan on the shirts and caps designed by Kevin Stephan, a fellow St. Louis poker player who went into business and was a big hit at Pokerpalooza this summer out in Las Vegas at the 2009 World Series of Poker. That's where One Time made its world debut. And he also had a lot of his products scarfed up by players at the World Poker Open recently in Tunica, Mississippi. He's getting ready to go to the Gulf Coast Poker Championship, which starts later this week in Biloxi, Mississippi. But he doesn't just travel around and sell his shirts there. You can also get them online via his website, onetimeapparel.com. You'll find cotton shirts, polo shirts, T-shirts, baseball jerseys, pull-up hoodies, zip-up hoodies, T-shirts for the ladies with scoop necks. There's fitted hats, flexible hats, hats with four aces, a pink camouflage hat for the ladies, all with that one-time logo on them. Go to onetimeapparel.com, charge it to your credit card, use PayPal, and help support the American economy because Kevin only uses local vendors and suppliers and manufacturers and donates a portion of the proceeds to various charitable organizations. That's onetimeapparel.com for the poker player outside of you. Now let's bring back the poker coach, Joe McGowan, for our poker coach segment tonight. And he says he's going to tell us about not leaving chips on the table. Go into some detail about what that means, Joe.
Well, Paul, before I get to that, I'm kind of confused by Dennis. I'm with him when he won the $4.5 million. I think he's more excited and happier today with the snow bunnies across from him than he won the $4.5 million. I've never heard him so happy.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I've never heard him in such a funny, laughing, good mood ever.
Well, you know, he's up in the Andes. It might be the lack of oxygen.
Maybe. Hey, good for him. I'm glad he's having a good time.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a few that I could probably get into, and we'll see how it goes. But perhaps the first one might be something we've probably talked about before and putting a different twist on it would be playing aces.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say you're playing in whatever size game you play in, and somebody raises up front or under the gun, and they have pocket queens, say. So they raise, standard size raise, and just whatever game it is, they get a caller, and maybe they get another caller, and now you look down at two aces.
All right, so let's say let's make it a 2-5 game, and the person raises it up to $25, and he gets two callers, so there's $75 in the pot, and you look down at your pocket aces.
Right. Most people, general theory there would be to go ahead and raise it, because if they call, a lot of people are going to feel like, well, the blind is definitely going to call, the big blind, and I'm going to pick up one more caller, and I don't want to play aces, you know, five- or six-way action if I just call and give people a good price behind me come in. So typically they would re-raise it. So let's say you make it a pot-sized bet. So if you say there's 75 in the pot, you make it $75. Now it comes back to the guy with the queens, and he says, well, geez, you know, this guy that just raised it and raised my upfront raise on the two callers, depending upon what his image is of you and what your image is of him, but all things being equal, he might now say with the queens, well, let me go ahead and see where I am with this hand because I raised under the gun, which should get some respect for whatever reason with his play and image and all. So he re-raises it. Say he makes it, you know, you pick a number 175, okay? Mm-hmm. Now the two callers likely are going to fold. Are you with me, Paul?
Yep, I'm with you.
Okay, so now the two callers that had called his original raise fold. Comes back to you, a lot of players here would go ahead and re-raise. And there's definitely times and spots where you might go ahead and re-raise. Maybe in a tournament you might go ahead and re-raise because a lot of money gets in there with ace-queens, ace-kings. Cash game, not a lot of people go all in with ace-queen or pocket fours, you know, pocket sevens. You know, if it's a deep stack, cash game and people are sitting relatively deep, you know, it takes some pretty big hands to have people go all in. And maybe if it's a 1-3 game, you said 2-5, depending upon how deep the players are sitting and what the buying is and how long they've been playing, you might then go all in or make another raise if you're only sitting there at 500 apiece. But if it's a 2-5 game and you're sitting there with 3,000 apiece, you know, I think perhaps just a smooth call there is adequate and a good play, because if you make extra raise, you really scream out to the other player that you have aces or kings, and likely aces. You know, most times it's going to be aces there. So I think there's a strong value in being able to disguise your hand almost at all times, when almost advertise to the other players. And if it's a skilled player, if the upfront player is a skilled player, and let's say they don't even have pocket queens. Let's say they were making a move with 7-8 suited or 5-7 or whatever you want to pick. Now they say, well, he's got aces, and he only raised X amount more for this final raise. I'm going to go ahead and call and hope I can get lucky and spike something on the flop because I know he has aces or kings. And if a flop comes out where I can maybe even semi-bluff or, you know, flop a pair and then maybe on a turn I pick up a straight draw or a flush draw, maybe I can semi-bluff there and I can represent that I flopped a set. And this other player will fold because this other player will think, you know, that this all makes sense.
But that only happens if that only happens if the person with the aces makes it so obvious that all they could possibly have in that situation is aces or perhaps kings.
Correct. Which happens a fair amount, Paul. Which does happen a fair amount. I mean, how many times you've been sitting there and you're chatting next to your buddy and the guy's down the other end of the table playing a hand, you're like, oh, he's got aces. What'd he have? Well, he definitely had a set. You know, there's times when you know the guy made his flush. At least you think you do. You know, 90% of the time, you feel confident that whatever card it is or whatever the situation is, that a certain player and a certain profile, that only in certain situations would this person ever do this. There's a lot of guys like that. And that's what I think our listeners, you know, you want to get away from. You don't want to be that guy. Now, if you can be a little tricky, you can make a play and you have a good read and you're making that move where you're the guy that would only have aces here and now you go all in, but you were doing it with 7-8 suited and taking a chance. Good for you. I mean, that's where you want to be. You want to be able to be mix up your play enough. And they can't tell whether you have aces or you're bluffing. They have no idea where you're at. That's really the way to go. When you're predictable in poker, you're probably going to be on the losing end. And you're probably going to leave some chips on the table. So I think in general there, if you're sitting deep, you know, I would lean towards just calling. Now your range, you know, he doesn't really he knows you have a hand typically. But, you know, when you go ahead and make that extra raise, to me it does scream, Paul, as you said, you know, that he definitely would have aces there. And I think it opens you up for the other player being able to outplay you and put you on such a narrow range, specifically aces or kings, and you could end up losing the pot. Now, the other player can take it away from you. And, you could say just go all in there. You know, you have aces, just go all in. And, again, that could be the play if you're short enough stack and the stacks make sense. That would be fine as well. But deeper stacks, you know, I'd like to get a little value out of there and be willing to play future streets and, try to go to battle with the aces heads up is a good spot.
Okay, that's a great one. Give us another tip about leaving chips on the table.
Okay. Well, this one is probably a little more rare that I can think of here. Let's say you have a spot like you have King 10, and again, you're 2-5 or whatever your game is that you play. This one doesn't happen a lot, but it's one that I really look for, and I see other players get in this spot. Maybe it's once a month. It's that rare. But if you're a regular poker... Sorry?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. A little background noise there. Sorry. But if you play enough, you know, 12 times a year, this is a spot where you might get someone's entire stack, and you should play it that way. You have King 10, and the flop comes 2 kings and a 4. So you flop 3 kings, and you have a 10 kicker. So you're a little worried that you might be outkicked, and you're getting some action, and you can make the pre-flop whatever you want, whether you call the raise or not or limped or whatever it is. And for the sake of the story, it may not matter too much. It might matter a little bit. And the turn, now, you know, you bet or the other person bets and you call because you're not sure if you're kicker, whichever way you want to put that as well. You have King 10, flop is King, King 4. So you're in pretty good shape for sure against most hands. You're feeling pretty good about it, but you may be worried of the kicker. The turn takes care of all that. A beautiful 10 comes. So again, this is pretty rare, but it does happen. Now you have a full house. And, of course, you went from worried that he has a big kicker to praying that your opponent now has a big kicker. So you're hoping he has, you know, ace-king or king-queen, and you're going to get paid here. So now you bet again, and this person calls you, and the river comes a 4. So now it's a double-paired board. 2 kings out there and 2 fours. So now any king, this other person has kings full of fours. The scary thing could be, and this would be the rarest thing of the rare that I don't know if I've ever seen, and I'm sure maybe it happens once a year where I might see it, but we're talking extremely rare. They may have quads.
Right.
If the person has quads and has pocket fours, and you have King 10 for the nut full house, I think it's pretty safe. Whatever his stack is and whatever your stack is, you're going to fully double him up or you're going to go broke if that's probably the case. And I'm willing to certainly take that unbelievably rare chance. If my read is exceptional strength from my opponent, then maybe, you know, I would play it a little more cautiously than what I would suggest. But many times I see players there, Paul, and they say, well, we're chopping it because, you know, the way the betting's gone, we both have a king. But, of course, you have that nut full house. You have the king 10, not the king 4. You're not playing kings full of 4s. You're playing kings full of 10s, of course. And this may be painfully obvious for more experienced listeners. For the intermediate and beginner-type listeners, now, this might be a spot where you go all in because it's a very, very difficult fold for an opponent when they're sitting there with kings full of fours and they feel like they have the nuts and the only hand that would beat them would be that king 10. And many, many, many players will call off their entire stack with that lone king and may feel like you're trying to make a move and pushing them off of an obvious chop pot. So it's very, very rare your opponent will fold there with the kings full. And like I said, they have pocket fours. Well, good luck to them, you know. They're going to get all your money. But hopefully you have a little bit of that reading ability that I talk about almost every week to maybe help guard against that 1 in 1,000 chance that that would be the case. But that would
you're
be
absolutely you're absolutely right about leaving chips on the table because I've seen so many players in a situation like this. Maybe they had that king 10 and the other guy had ace king, and when that second 4 came on the board, he looked at it as, okay, well, we both have the full house. The other guy bet, I raised, he called me. Okay, so I didn't put as many chips in. No, I bet, and he raised, and I just called, and I turned it over.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I've got the bigger full house than you, but you're right. They left behind that opportunity to get every chip in the other guy's stack. That's a great thing. You're right, it doesn't happen all the time, and, if you worry about the other guy having quad fours, then you probably are playing scared poker to begin with. You're going to have to get your money in those situations 99 out of 100
right.
times.
And it does happen, Paul, where people just call there. Or people say, you know, they'll only call. It happens over and over and over again. You're not going to see that, you know, with really experienced players, of course. But even, you know, 5-10 games, maybe even a 10-20 game occasionally, depending upon the player, they'll make these type of mistakes where they leave whatever that guy's stack is, whether it's 10,000 or 200, you know, depending upon the game, or bigger. They leave that money sitting there. They could have had all of it. And many times, they're not even aware that they left those chips on the table. They're happy that they won whatever was in the pot. They don't even realize.
While we're talking about leaving chips on the table, I have one that is kind of similar to that, which I want to throw into the mix here, and that is the concept of making the nut straight on the turn, but you have the flush redraw, and you don't exploit that opportunity. So, for instance, let's say in your scenario you had King 10 again. This time you had King 10 of clubs. And the flop came, let's say the flop came Queen, Jack, 4 with one club. So you've got the open ender with the backdoor flush draw. And your opponent bets, and you call with your draw. And then here comes the Ace of clubs, giving you both. You know, you've got Broadway, and he's betting and acting like he's got Broadway as well. But you've got Broadway with the nut flush redraw. There's no card that can come out there that's going to hurt you unless, of course, he's got a set and the board pairs. But you're confident in your read that you both have the same hand at this point. A lot of players will just play that like, well, obviously we're going to chop the pot, and they won't put as many chips in there as they really should, because right there you have nothing to lose by putting in all of your chips if you possibly can, because the worst case scenario is you chop the pot. The best case scenario is that the river fills your flush and you take it all.
Or like you say, Paul, maybe they have a set, but I'm willing to put pretty much all my chips in there if he has a set, because I'm such a big favorite. So there's a great spot to gamble. If he's willing to put it in there with a set with one card to come, you know, and you already have the nuts with the nuts flush draw, absolutely. I put in every penny that I can. I agree totally.
All right, those are great things to keep in mind next time you're playing a cash game. And you could probably apply a lot of that during tournament play as well. Joe, the poker coach McGowan. Joe, I'd like you to stick around after the break, because we're going to play a one-on-one interview that you did with a guy who I know is one of your heroes, Mike Caro.
Okay.
And I want to talk to you a little bit about him coming up in the next half hour, okay?
Sounds great.
But first, we'll take a break, and then a conversation Dennis and I had with Peter Eastgate, the reigning champion of the World of Poker, as the Lumiere Place final table continues from downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel, after this word from Dennis about one of our sponsors, Reactor Watch.
Reactor Watches, that is the watch that I wear all the time. You need to go check out Reactor Watches, reactorwatches.com. That is the home of the best-built sports watch, period. And I wouldn't say it if I couldn't back it up. Compare it. Compare this Reactor watch or any of these Reactor watches to any watch on the market, regardless of prices. Those watches are built to meet and in many cases exceed the Swiss standards. I'm telling you, this watch is awesome. And they back it up, because if there ever is a problem with it, they will take care of it, guaranteed completely, and I'll have it back to you in most cases in 72 hours or less. Reactor watches. Check it out, guys.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million, because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. right now. Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with two-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Put on your sunglasses, stack up your chips, and hide those tails.
Yes, he's going all in, and Chan has him. Johnny Chan, the master.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the show. I am Paul Harris, along with St. Louis's poker millionaire Dennis Phillips. And joining us in the guest chair today is the reigning world champion of poker, the man who was the best of the November 9 when it all was said and done at the end of the final table last year. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Eastgate is here. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Do you look at him, Dennis, and say, oh, this is the guy who knocked me out?
No, I hate to admit it, but he's actually a very good guy, and we've become friends.
Yeah, so you guys have you guys played against each other since last November?
We did down at the Caribbean, at the Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure. We played the 5K event down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, folks, he beat me again. No, hey, in all honesty, Peter down there ended up winning the 5K down there, took home another nice check, played a very good tournament. I came in, 16th or something like that?
Something like that.
The final two tables that I made on it. In fact, we were even joined by a third one from the November 9, Darius Saharto, was also in there.
Did you knock him out, too?
I knocked him out.
So it was fun, though.
Well, congratulations on all that success. I got to start with the obvious question. The 2009 World Series, how was it compared to the 2008 World Series for you?
Well, last year, as I got to the World Series, I only got to the World Series to play the main event. So I flew in on day 1A to play. I played 1C. I changed my starting date from 1D to 1C. And this year, I came in late of May to play all the events, or most of them.
Mm-hmm. What events have you played in this year's World Series? Did you play pretty much every Hold'em event?
Well, I think I played 8 or 10 Hold'em events.
Yeah, I'm curious, did you play anything besides the Hold'em events? Did you play a Raz or a Triple Draw or a Stud or anything?
I played the 10,000 Parlamento Maha tournament.
Oh, the PLO, okay. Yeah. All right.
But I didn't last it to day two of any of the tournaments, so I've been playing fairly unconcentrated. So
yeah,
you were more worried about the main event, I think, than anything else. So
yeah,
from what we hear, PLO is huge in Europe. Is that true?
Yeah, it's always been huge, but I've never been very good at PLO. I've been a No Limit Hold'em fan myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better at playing No Limit Hold'em.
And how's the last year been for you personally? Or maybe I should ask the last 7 months since you since you yourself became a poker millionaire. You got a big smile on your face when I mentioned that. How's it been for you? How's your life changed?
Well, it's kind of a broad question because my life has changed in many kind of ways. I'm a lot more on the road than I used to be. Before I entered the main event, I was an online player, playing a lot online, making my money online. Now I'm playing the live tournaments all around Europe and in Australia and the States as well. So it's a different life, and it's a good life. And as I go out to the tournaments, I'm a recognized player because I won immortality by winning the main event.
Yeah. Do players come gunning for you now? Obviously, last year you were an unknown. Now you're a very well-known. What does that do to your opponents and how they play against you?
Well, they're gunning for me a whole lot more than they used to. And I was known for playing loose aggressive before I won the main event, and I've continued to do that. I've actually continued to play even more loose aggressive, which has been kind of bad because my opponents are trying to get a hold of me, and I think the right strategy would be to kind of tighten up against them.
Mm-hmm.
And, therefore, my results have been pretty bad because I haven't adjusted correctly, but hopefully I'll do better in the future.
Actually, I can agree with that. I find people try to trap me more. They're really laying in wait, wanting to try and do it, wanting to take the hand down against me and everything. And I can imagine them doing the same thing for you then.
Yeah.
They'll sit back there and try and trap you, let you be your aggressive self. Because you have a very good game, obviously,
yeah,
on that. But if people lay in wait enough, eventually they catch.
They want to knock out the world champion, and they want to tell that story, even if they don't go on to win it themselves. Hey, you know who I knocked out today, right?
Yeah. That's perfectly right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I've got to ask this question. Dennis is tired of talking about this, but I've got to ask you, because you were in between them. There's the famous hand for Dennis Phillips fans from the November 9, the final table, was his ace-king versus Yvonne's ace-queen. And you were literally in the middle of it because Yvonne was to your right and Dennis was to your left. Yeah. And I've been wondering for a while now, even before we knew we were going to talk to you, what were you thinking when that hand was going on? Because you're pretty good at reading your opponents. You went on to win this because you have a pretty good poker mind. What were you thinking as it went along and Dennis came in and then Yvonne made the move and then Dennis made the move? And then give me a little of your thoughts on that, if you would.
Well, as the hand played out, I was shocked. Like, I wasn't expecting the big stacks to go at each other, and especially not in that kind of way. They were committing like $8 million chips pre-flop each. So, so that was a massive putt. I was like, holy, are we gonna have a massive chip leader now? And obviously, like as you said at the final table, you hope some of the other players bust out because that's a money jump for yourself.
Right.
So I was just rooting for any of you to bust out. I must tell the truth, what I kind of felt about the hand. Like, as the hand played out, no matter what you were holding, I was thinking, like, that couldn't be a good play either if you had kings, queens, or whatever you were holding. Like, I didn't like committing that many chips and then folds.
You were sure that Dennis did not have aces?
Yeah, I was confident that he didn't have aces, but like you were claiming that you had queens, and I kind of believe.
Oh no! Somebody said it, and I said, "All right."
Oh, you said, "Yeah."
I never agreed to it at all. I just didn't disagree. Big difference.
That's right. But
as the hand was going along, Peter, as you were watching what was happening, what did you put them on? For instance, you know, when Dennis makes his initial bet, and then when Yvonne comes back, at each point you've got to be thinking to yourself, "Okay, well, he probably has this." Where did you put them?
Well, I was fairly positive that that Ivan must have had aces, because that would be the only thing that made sense. Because I had the kind of like ambition to squeeze my way into the top five, because the top five would have been a $3 million score, and I was definitely not looking to play any big pots. Like I was thinking of, like, if somebody raised before me, the only hand that I would free bet with would either be a bluff or aces. Because I wouldn't want to put myself in a position with queens or kings where I wouldn't be a big favorite over like ace king, and I could risk my tournament life against you and Ivan. So
But so as it went along, you put Yvonne on aces, and what were you thinking that Dennis had?
Well, I was believing that you had queens, but like I said, either way, I didn't like the way that you play the hand, no matter what you were holding. So,
Where do you think he made the mistake? Should he have not gotten involved in the hand at all?
I think you made the mistake pre-flop by limb re-racing. I would just have called, because I wouldn't be risking like a fourth bet from Ivan. So I think that was a mistake.
So you weren't surprised when Yvonne shoved on the flop?
No, I can understand why he's shoving there. But if he had aces, obviously he only had ace queen, but he had a double gutter, so it makes sense to shove the flop.
It was actually, and it's funny now I can look back upon it. While you guys were going heads up, that's when it finally came out as what the hands were. But before that, we were up in the stands, and I had talked to Daniel Negreanu. I'd talked to a dozen different other pros. Not a single one of them put either of us on our correct hands.
Yeah.
Neither one of us put either. They were guessing me with queens. They were guessing him with aces. They were all sorts of things on that. Nobody had the hand right. Zero. It was like 0-for-12 among the pros.
Were you shocked when you found out it was ace king versus ace queen?
Yeah, like I was agreeing with the pros. I didn't put them on either of those two hands. So.
Yeah.
So,
when you and Yvonne got heads up after that long 13-hour Monday, and you came, or Sunday, I guess it was, and you came back on Monday and you played your heads up for a tremendously long session, which anybody who saw it on ESPN thinks lasted about 6 minutes, because they only showed two hands from your long session. Did you, the night before, after Dennis got knocked out and then you were heads up, Did you think to yourself about your strategy for the next day? And when you woke up the next morning, did you think, okay, well, I've been with Yvonne now. I know how he plays. This is what I'm going to do today. Did you have any pre-strategy?
Like, I'm not a big fan of making any pre-strategy before you play. Obviously, you have some kind of pre-reads of how your opponent's tendencies are, but you can never predict what kind of cards you will be distributing and how your opponent is going to mix up his plays. So I take it hand by hand and see whatever happens and try to make the best decision in the hand. And that's how I play poker, basically.
Yeah. It's a good way to play poker.
So, yeah, poker is all about adjusting to your opponent and kind of get unpredictable yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it we had here? Wasn't it Mike Sexton that said anybody that goes in with a preordained plan is preordained to fail?
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
That's right.
So, yeah. You need to go in exactly what you said. You analyze the table, you play against the table, and you play, you know, what the table allows you to play.
Exactly. Like, at most tables, the dynamics is always changing. That's right. You can never make a pre-strategy because how are you going to know how the dynamics are going to change?
And one person, one player knocked out and replaced by a different one can change the whole dynamics of the table.
Sure.
It's amazing sometimes.
Absolutely. The other thing I've got to ask you about, kind of a famous incident, high-stakes poker.
Yeah.
Where you laid down your deuce.
Yeah.
You know the hand I'm talking about. Anybody who watches the show knows the hand I'm talking about with Barry Greenstein and Tom Dwan and you. And you had trips, and Dwan was just being dur, right?
Right.
Before I even ask you about that, tell me how you assess his play. Is he one of the most dangerous people you've ever played against?
Well, it's kind of, yeah, he was, as you played throughout the show, and I played him on PokerStars as well, and he's an excellent player. But as I played him on PokerStars, that was in January, and he wasn't playing that well. Because he was on a big losing streak at that point, so but still I'm still playing way worse than him, so he's still beating the crap out of me.
Don't you love it? We come up here and you talk about my ace king that I, you know, and then he's going to talk about your deuce that you laid down. God, Paul, thanks a lot.
Well, no.
But, now we're having fun with you.
But I'm curious about what was going through his mind as a player there, and I'm also curious what was going through your mind when you did lay that deuce down. What did you put dur on there?
Well, I was obviously kind of convinced that Durr had a better deuce than me.
Mm-hmm. You had deuce three, right?
No, deuce four. But
deuce four, okay.
Basically the same hand.
Yeah.
Don't degrade it. It's a deuce four. Come on now.
Well, I thought that it was such a strong bluff by Durr. If it was making a bluff by bluffing into two people, obviously that was why he could successfully bluff there, because he had kind of Barry behind him to... I had Barry behind me to protect Durr from me folding.
Yeah.
So, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And, obviously I was not only worrying about the 100K bet on the turn, I was obviously also worrying about most of the rivers and where I would expect him to make a very substantial bet.
You kind of figured that if you were calling there, you were basically putting your whole stack in.
Well, not necessarily, but I was weighing in what kind of bet I could be facing on the river, and I was kind of thinking that he was going to bet most of the rivers and he was going to make a substantial bet. So yeah, I was not necessarily calling the turn to call the river, because obviously you re-evaluate every string as the action turns out, but that was my main concern as well. And going into the high stakes thing, I bought in for too much. Like, Tom Dwan was the only guy buying in for $500,000. The other guys bought in for either 200 or 300. And Tom was free to my left, having position on me. And there was no reason for buying in for $500,000 when the best player, there's only one guy buying in for $500,000. And he's the best player at the table and having position on you as well. So, and I was also not comfortable with playing for $500,000, I must admit, after this show. So.
Yeah. Your life changed, but not so much that you were comfortable playing for $500,000.
Well, I don't agree upon that. I was necessarily playing scared, because I was giving a lot of action and playing a lot of major pots, but I was not as comfortable as I would have been with $10,000. That's for sure.
Right. Now here's what I really want to get to. After the hand was over, Doyle Brunson gets into a little debate with Dwan, and I think, who else was involved in this argument?
Hilary Sahamis.
That's right. Yeah. And they get involved in the question of, did you have a deuce? And Doyle was 100% convinced you did not have a deuce in that hand, that you would not have laid down a deuce there. and Dwan was willing to bet him, and I think a couple of other people got involved in bets, and after they made their bets, you were grinning the entire way. Not that you were giving anything away, but I think you were getting a kick out of the fact that they were talking about this, right?
Well, I was obviously a little bit sick as I I got bluffed off the best hand. So
yes.
I wasn't necessarily grinning. I was also, like, kind of puking. Sitting there. Like, you always feel a little bit tilted after you get bluffed out of a pot because you lose momentum and your opponent is gaining momentum.
Right.
It's hard to, like, even though you kind of feel like you made the best decision in the moment, you still feel like, well, now he's getting on top of me right now, so.
Yeah. But while they were having that debate, after a while, and because it's edited for TV, I have no idea how long this took, at a certain point, you said, for $1,000, I'll tell you what I had.
No, that's not right. Tom offered me $1,000 to tell me.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. But it was only if I had to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been paid, because Doyle wouldn't have paid me. Because he was convinced that I didn't have to do. So obviously, I took the $1,000 just to tell the truth.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the right thing to do because it might worsen my image even more for the table that the other guys kind of feel like they can bully me around.
Yeah, I wondered about that a little bit. Was that $1,000 worth it to you at a table with those guys and that much money on the table?
Well, if you look at the results, it wasn't profitable for me because they kind of got the hang of me. But I don't know. I felt like it was profitable, but in retrospect, it might not have been.
What are your plans for the fall?
Well, I haven't decided yet. My big brother and his girlfriend are in Indonesia right now, having a vacation. I have some Danish poker friends who are going to Miami afterwards. But that's, like, only for the next 1 or 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going
to
do this.
Well, I mean, are you going back to the EPT? Do you have any particular tournaments you like that you definitely want to go back to?
Well, I'm going to play the PokerStars EPTs.
Oh, yeah.
In the autumn, that's for sure.
Okay.
I like to play those, and especially because they've changed the structure for the better, which makes it less deep. The EPT have been criticized over the last, or since it started, for having a bit of a crapshoot, but now they changed the structure a whole bit, so they're putting in an extra day, and it's going to be, skill is going to be far more important than it used to be, and that's exciting for the more skillful players.
Do you ever have a chance to stay home and go play poker in London? Do you go to places like the Vic and play live poker there ever?
Well, when I'm done playing the live tournaments, I'm too worn out to play more poker. And if I would like to play poker, I like the efficiency of playing online at PokerStars because I can sit wherever I want. If I have a computer and an internet connection, I can sit down and I don't need to play for 3 or 4 hours. I can play for only like 1 hour or half an hour, whatever I feel like. If I'm playing cash games.
Yep.
Well, I've flown all around the world, same as you have in that. And the question I always get is, well, do you have a particular place or a particular casino or a particular tournament that you really liked and you definitely want to go back to? You know, I went down to South America for about 3 times. I haven't been to Australia. Not that was, you know, Monte Carlo, whatever. Is there any particular EPT or any particular Asian one or one you haven't gone to yet, maybe that you really want to go to?
I was playing the APPT in Sydney in December 2008, 2 or 3 weeks after I won the main event, and that was a terrific trip. So,
excellent.
I'm looking forward to going back to Australia. They have a really nice atmosphere down there, and they're very friendly, and it was a nice tournament to play.
Joe Hashem says, I've got to get to Australia. I've never been there in my life. He says, you got to get down there.
I was there years ago. There weren't casinos there at the time. You got to go. And by the way, next time they bring it closer, I'm going back. It's just a little too far for me. Congratulations on your success. You are still the reigning champion of the world of poker. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. This is 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Before they sit down to play tonight, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Well, actually, Dennis is half a world away in the Andes in Argentina playing a PokerStars event called the America's Cup of Poker. He's the captain of the U.S. team, taking on teams from seven other countries over the course of the next few days. He'll be back live here in downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Poker Room with me next Tuesday with lots of stories about how that trip went. This portion of the show is brought to you by the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, the group that fights for you, the poker player. Whether you have home games or you play in casinos or you play online, the PPA is a nonprofit group that fights for you in Congress, in state legislatures, and in courthouses around the country. Speaking of courthouses, we got a mixed ruling today from a federal court, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which passed down a ruling that essentially says that internet gambling is a states' rights issue, that the UIGEA should not necessarily be deemed unconstitutional, but that it bears repeating, the court said, that the act itself does not make any gambling activity illegal. Whether the transaction constitutes unlawful internet gambling turns on how the law of the state from which the bettor initiates the bet would treat that bet. So that if it's illegal under that state's law, then it constitutes unlawful internet gambling. In essence, internet gambling apparently may be treated the same as brick-and-mortar gambling, which, like here in Missouri, is governed at the state level. There are six states now that have laws on the books outlawing internet gambling to various degrees. It'd be interesting to see if either the federal government or the Interactive Media Entertainment and Gaming Association, which has been fighting this fight with the PPA, will take this to the Supreme Court, or what it will mean for online gamblers across the country. But you can support passage of legislation like the bills from Senator Bob Menendez and Congressman Barney Frank by supporting the PPA. Become a member of the Poker Players Alliance by going to thepppa.org, thepppa.org. $20 makes you a member and makes you a part of the group that fights for the rights of poker players just like you. All right, up next now here on the Lumiere Place Final Table, it's time for a Poker Coach one-on-one segment with Joe McGowan and the guy who calls himself the mad genius of poker, Mike Caro. Roll it.
Tell me a little bit about the poker tells and how tough it is for you when you're at the table. Do you feel a little more pressure to be you with the tells and people expect you to be able to make a great call or a great fold by the read?
Well, you know, one thing you have to understand is that tells are not going to happen all the time. They're only going to happen once in a while. So if you're looking for a tell every hand or if you're expecting it to be 100% accurate, you're just using tells incorrectly. Most tells are just indicators like any other indicators, like the cards that show on the board, for instance, are indicators. It's just another factor to weigh. There are certain 100% tells, and even in the biggest tournaments, even the biggest players are subject to this. They won't broadcast tells in the same exaggerated manners that someone might in a small game. They won't shrug and sigh and say, "I bet," in a sad voice, but there'll be little ingredients of that remaining. The shaking hand tell, that happens all the time in the big tournaments. When somebody makes a big hand, you'll see that little tremor. It's never a bluff. People used to think in the old days that might be a bluff. Player might be nervous about making a bluff and therefore starts to shake. But as we know, bluffers just don't shake. They bolster themselves. They become rigid. And so when you see these tiny tremors from someone who is formally very steady, that's always an indication that they've made a strong hand. That happens in these tournaments. It happened at the table I was playing last night with you, I believe. I can't remember a specific instance, but I'm using that as an example. Because
I hope it wasn't me. Was it me?
I can testify right now, and I'm not even saying if this is truthful or not, but I want to say it for political reasons. It was not you.
I love that, Mike. Do you have any DVDs or CDs or any books or anything people recommend that you could plug, or where can we find some of your great material?
You can go to Poker One. That's one with the numeral. That's a poker with the numeral one. Let me say that correctly. .com. And you can buy it there. You can buy them from Gambler's Bookstore online or here in Las Vegas. You can buy my books at practically any bookstore in the country, and you don't need to do that. I just want to be loved. Don't spend your money if you don't want to. They're pretty good, but love me. I love you.
Mike, honestly, I feel like if people play poker and they do not make the tiny investment in your books and DVDs, I think they're out of their minds. I'm dead serious. I am hooked on tells, and I owe that to you. I love tells. It's my favorite absolute part of the game. That's what makes the game interesting for me. When I'm not in a hand and I'm bored, I'm never bored because I'm trying to watch the other players and pay attention and pick some of these things up that I've actually learned quite a few from you.
Well, it's good that you say that, Joe, and the reason for that is that the tells that I defined to be serious in that book, which came out, I think, a million years ago or something like that, have not been challenged because I left out anything that was speculative. Anything you see in that book is dead on accurate, and people recognize that it's accurate because they can visualize themselves doing these very same things, and they've either been victim of doing them, they've done them, or they have tried to not do them. They've tried to conceal it, but they can see that those are the tendencies. So the things there are real. And the reason you're finding success focusing on these things, it's because they are legitimate. They're not guesswork. They're not wishful thinking, and they're not some kind of homespun wisdom. Those are the truth.
There is absolutely, positively, no doubt in my mind that what you just said is correct. And I will say, I've bumped into some fairly successful limit players that think tells are fantasy. I think they don't even know any better, and they certainly see tells and don't even realize it, and they act on it, and they just maybe don't know better. But they're the rare breed today. I mean, almost everybody today knows that the stuff that you have taught and you've put in your books is spot on. And for the most part, tells are huge, huge, huge in poker. And if you're not using them or looking for them, you're at a big, big disadvantage.
Well, the reason I can say that tells are that important is because I probably, you know, to speak semi-modestly, I'm probably responsible for a great deal of the statistical research and the analysis that's been done, so I can see where each element weighs into the final formula. And what I suspect is, bless their hearts, people who diminish the value of tells are probably players who have no real talent for spotting them and probably in real life are not very people-oriented and don't understand interactions between people. And I don't blame people for being that way. And when you don't see something, it's easy to proclaim that it doesn't exist. So, you know, if you've never seen the color red, red doesn't exist to you. If you've never seen a tell doesn't exist to you. So like I said, bless their hearts, wish them success, but they're missing out on a great share of profit.
That's the mad genius of poker, Mike Carroll, one-on-one with Joe, the poker coach, McGowan. Joe, quickly, he's one of your heroes, isn't he?
He absolutely is, Paul. I love him. I just, selfishly, I wish he never made any of the tapes or DVDs or books. I wish they didn't exist.
Well, it made things a lot easier for you at the table. All right, Joe,
absolutely.
Thanks. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Paul.
And next week, Dennis Phillips will be back from Argentina with stories about his trip to the America's Cup of Poker. Thanks to everybody here at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris. Get the podcast on thechipleader.com, and thanks for listening.